Hello and welcome to another episode of Psyche of Sales. This is an exciting one, Prash, joined here by Prashant Iyer. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Johnny. And you can call me Prash. Prashant's way too formal.
Way too formal. We'll stick with Prash. I think I've only ever called you Prashant twice in our lives.
I think this is the first time.
This is the first time, yeah. So we've gone from there. Why don't I start? I normally get the person to introduce themselves, but I thought I might give a little bit of context, if that's okay. Prash and I have worked together for a few years as a client relationship, I suppose we could say.
Yeah.
You worked for one of our clients at Wear Super for a number of years, and you're in a, we'll call it a career transition, but I've always been incredibly impressed with your thoughts around sales, around education, around learning, and we've been having a whole bunch of chats lately around those topics, and we thought, why not record one of them? Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a great assessment, and likewise, mate, obviously we've worked together for a while, and you know, what you do and, you know, sales and whatnot, I find, you know, fundamentally it's a skill set that we all need to have. No matter what you do or what your title is, you're always selling.
Completely agree. You've also been a user of the platform itself. I've noticed you've shared a few videos yourself around the different topics, which I think has been really helpful. And I think you've seen a pretty good result off that. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, and I know we'll probably talk about this a little bit more. I think the platform is a great opportunity to just sort of reflect more than anything else, and just go, well, what are the basics? And that's what I've used some of the content on, that, you know, it's on LinkedIn more recently. And the engagement resonates, and it's not like I've come up with any earth-shattering new, you know, thesis on selling or networking or questioning. I think it's, you know, the basics just resonating, surprising.
It's why we always have a bit of a laugh internally, and that we've been working with a brilliant agency, and we've got some new content that's coming out. Some of them are probably a bit more edgier than others, but one of the things that we've been tempted to do is actually call people out that are overcomplicating sales, call people out that are saying things around leadership that just are untrue. This idea of, you know, 10x this, and if you just do these 33 things, it's just like, fundamentally, sales is simple. Like, if you understand how people like to be communicated with, you understand them and what drives their decision, and you match that driver, they will more often than not work with you, buy off you, you know. And I think that sometimes we can overcomplicate it. We can add stages. We can remove stages to that value chain. We can try and pitch when people aren't ready, all those things. So I think, yeah, fundamentally, it's really, really simple. Can I tell you the one post we really wanted to go on LinkedIn? Well, I wanted to go hard on LinkedIn. And it was a guy posted a not a meme, but a picture of something. And it said, probably is a meme, and it said, what leadership was like 30 years ago. And it said, telling people what to do, demanding things. Like, it was just all these negative thoughts. And then it said, what leadership looks like now, asking, values-based, and so on. And it just frustrated me, the thought that in the last 500 years or 1,000 years, we've never had good leadership. Like, we've never seen any example.
The human race has not evolved at all over the last God knows how many years because of what people assume are leadership traits, right?
Yeah.
And I would argue what that person said in the meme or whatever like that, you know, I think people would go, actually, I'm observing that behavior today.
Yes.
So you would argue that some of that still it might happen.
It's a really good point. I didn't even look at it like that. And I just think it's this idea of they're trying to find a new spin or take this new spin on leadership. And it's just like, leadership has always been those traits. Right?
Correct.
It's like, I just think back to the, you know, think of great sports leaders, great political leaders over the past however many decades. Like, the history is full of them. And so this idea, but also, you know, there's very few probably perfect leaders and totally rounded leaders. And so, you know, again, looking at it as like, well, that's what we aspire to be as leaders, but are we that all the time?
Yeah. And I think the reality is, and you hit the nail on the head, you know, there have been good leaders, bad leaders, and there will be good leaders and bad leaders in the future as well, by the way.
Yep.
At the end of the day, you know, I've certainly learned that, you know, leadership or a good leader or a bad leader is what someone's, you know, you've created that perception in an individual's mind. You know, I don't walk around saying I'm a great leader. I go, I couldn't really care less about, you know, but at the end of the day, it's what your people that directly report to you or work with you go, well, it's actually what, whether or not they think I'm a good leader.
Yep.
You know?
So there's a book called Nine Lies About Work. Yeah, and I absolutely love it. Okay. And through COVID, I would listen to it whilst going for walks around Balmoral Beach. And I would stop and just take notes after notes, and my poor team would have to cop me writing things. And it's nine myths that people have. But one of the aspects that it talks about is leadership.
Yeah.
And it says, well, what's the definition of a great leader? And it says, well, a great leader is one that people want to follow. Like, it really is that simple.
Totally.
Why will they follow them? Because otherwise there's this design of, you know, the captain of the Springboks, you know, Khaleesi, when they talk about be humble like Khaleesi, he's probably a very different leader to maybe the leader of the All Blacks or the leader of the Australian cricket team or the Indian cricket team. Does that mean that they're bad leaders? It just means that they have a different approach, a different style.
Yeah.
And it's about getting those people to follow. Yeah. And I would say, like, maybe I'm going a bit reaching here, but when you talk about the people that work with me or for me, the new world is, it's beyond that, isn't it? Like, you know, if you think about, like, I know this, be humble like Khaleesi, because I've seen it, I've read about it, I've, you know, people talk about it, like, it's global now. And so I think that you putting those things on LinkedIn is actually offering leadership to people you know. I think you've got 8,000 followers, I'm a bit jealous of this. But it's also to people, random strangers.
No, well, I think, you know, that's my take on leadership, is to show up as who you are and not who you pretend to be,
yeah,
right? Because at the end of the day, whether it's, you know, whether you've got a team of 5 or 10 or 2 or 1, you know, people resonate with you because they resonate with who you are.
Yeah.
Maybe not as a leader at sometimes, it's just who you are as a person. And for me, sharing that content, and I've always said this, you know, where it's probably something I've always wanted to do more of it.
Yeah.
But I think there's that perception of, oh no, it's LinkedIn or it's TikTok or it's Instagram or whatever. I go, look, just show up as who you are, because the reality is, people that know you really well will know who you are.
Yep.
And to your point, if that means it resonates with people that don't know you and want to connect with you or want to know more about what you do, or even just, you know, I had a phone call from someone yesterday who I have not spoken to for about 10 plus years. Used to be one of my candidates back in my recruitment days. Calls me out of the blue saying, hey mate, I've been watching your videos and, you know, they're really nice and you've sort of encouraged me to do something. To be honest, when I do those videos, I wasn't thinking about, oh no, this is targeted for this audience or that audience. But the idea of this was to just, you know, I guess in my head, it was to encourage people.
Yep.
And just getting the phone call was like, I was driving back after that. I thought, you know what? A really nice unintentional consequence of sharing content.
Yeah. It is an amazing one. And I've got to excuse my voice and my sniffles at the moment out there. I've got to make sure I don't keep the microphone too close. We've got a pretty cool setup here, don't we? We're sitting in
great
a
setup.
Hotel room in the Grand Hyatt with our portable Rode microphones. Very, very professional that we've got here. But I think that idea of, like, we've started sharing content the last couple of years, right? Because we've got this vision and belief of we want to change the way the world sells.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do that by only having people pay for it, right? So we have a digital platform, we have consulting business, we help people on major pitches, but I also coach a whole bunch of people who are going for jobs,
mm-hmm,
because I just want to help, right?
Yeah.
I coach people over the phone and just help them out on ideas and topics. One called me the other day saying, I've got 2 candidates, one's like this, one's like that, I don't know which one we need, like, you know our business, what do you think? And I said, but who's going to do the job as well? And part of the role was actually cold calling and picking up the phone. So I actually said, why don't you book them in for 2 cold call sessions? Why don't you give them 5 mock leads at 10:30 or 11? Like, actually do the job you're being asked to do.
Idea.
One of them said, that's a fantastic idea, I can't wait. The other one said, I'm not overly comfortable doing this. Great, there's your decision.
Yeah, great
tomorrow
idea.
If you're hired, you're cold calling. And so that idea, but I was going to say, we started Psyche of Sales. And we did it because, shout out to Tim Nagle, who was our neighbour, but also ran Apostle Digital. He's now going around the world taking photos and videos of some of the best architects you'll ever see. It's quite amazing. But we were having a glass of wine as a team, and Tim was part of it, talking about sales and talking about some of the engagements we'd worked on and what we'd learned and how we're going to do it something differently. And he said, you guys should just record this. And that's why the first 10 episodes were all done over a glass of wine, because that was actually the thinking, mm, you know, combining a couple of passions. And I do it for a couple of reasons. One is I just love it. I do it. I love talking about it. I get to talk to interesting people. We said, let's talk about sales, and we've talked about leadership for 10 minutes. And we haven't even touched on it.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it, right, is who knows where it's going to go.
Correct.
And the amount of calls I've had from people, but people who I really admire and respect that have said how much value they've been getting from it, is just what a cool sidebar.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I've certainly found more recently, I've been, you know, probably been more active on LinkedIn and sharing content than I have previously. But the subtle difference in my content today is more about, probably more about personal development and just again, showing up as, you know, who I am or who I aspire to be at least. And it's amazing the what resonates with people. And you sort of go, I'm just doing a post out there. But then all of a sudden, you know, I've had a couple of people reach out saying, hey, we do a podcast on XYZ topic. Would you be interested? I'm like, absolutely. Like, wasn't my intention to do, you know, get on a podcast or whatever. But thank you for having me here, Johnny, more importantly. But, you know, it's just those things where you don't know where it can go. And I think that's what I find with content, particularly when you're passionate about it.
Yep.
It shows up.
100% does. And I want to make a couple of points. One is I knew you before you were famous. But it does show up. You know, it shows up that you actually enjoy it, you're passionate about it. I think sometimes I probably show too much passion in meetings with clients where sometimes I feel like I'm wanting this more than they are. You know, like I'm actually watching it going, why do I want performance, high performance, more than you do?
Yeah.
Like this should be driven by you. But I do love it. But can also, I love it because there is formulas to it. And it takes the same amount of hours in the day to do it. I had a boxing coach once and I had two, and one, he used to just train me and I used to get a great sweat and I was really, really fit. Then I trained with this guy who fought for a world title, actually. In fact, they both did. And he said to me, it takes the same amount of time to throw the punch properly, right? The same amount of it. So why don't we do that? So we'd focus on the skill set and then led up to like training for an amateur bout and things like this. But it was that idea of just getting really focused on, you know, it's the same amount of hours. Why not learn a skill rather than just get a sweat up?
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, we all know, you know, if we really think about it, I think we all know what our skill is, right? Whether we put a label on it or not is a different thing, right? Me and you were talking about this the other day where, you know, what you're really good at is getting that performance and that sort of, and you call it sales, right? But, you know, I don't look at, that's the label I think we've put on it. But ultimately, you know, you're coaching people to be either better at what they do or better, run better teams or, you know, better organizations. But people will go, oh, no, that's sales. I go, well, that's not sales. It's just personal development or professional development. That's what it is. But you can, whether that's in sales or whether it's in an operations role or a leadership role, the fundamental skill set applies.
Well, it's communication.
Yeah.
There's a level of influence in there. Some people don't like the idea of influencing, but you're influencing whether you like it or not. Like if you walk in the room and are a poor communicator, you are selling them. You are selling them in a negative way.
So true.
Right? And I think that's something that people, they miss. And I often use this terminology of like allowing you to be heard. Like I worked with a group of young female graduates for a firm recently. Like their IQ compared to my IQ is just like, they're just really clever, really driven, just really inspiring. Like sometimes I sort of talk about all these senior people we meet. I had so much fun in this session and I had them standing up and delivering and each of them had a different style and I wanted them to own the style because it's easy at 24, 25, 26 to just try and pretend to be a senior exec or be almost be a bit boring, be safe. And I sort of talked about that there is thousands of people with degrees and double degrees who can be safe, but there's one of you. So how do you really own a style? And it was just so much fun. And it's just communication. It's walking into a room, how to communicate, how to own a room, how to, you know, when you've got to do a presentation, how do you make sure you get that first 20, 30 seconds right? So you're not saying, thank you very much. It's such a pleasure to be here. And you spend a minute thanking people and you haven't said anything. So I agree with you. It's not all sales. I think that early on I was very much, no, it's sales because that was our differentiator. That's what we worked in. But the amount of execs that we've coached that we've, you know, that the other day I had a bunch of people asking me career advice on things like this. And it was like, I laugh at myself going, I'm not an executive coach because I probably more tell than I do, you know, take them through that process. But I do think, it suits everyone in every role. But I love that idea of it just wants you to be heard. Being heard is really important. And if you can't communicate effectively, you're not going to get heard.
Yeah, and I think we underestimate that, you know, that communication skill. And, you know, I was sort of thinking about this, you know, even in the lead up to this conversation where it's quite timely, you know, the Olympics are on at the moment and clearly both of us are elite, you know, athletes, maybe in our heyday, who knows, right? But I was thinking about it. Some of these athletes have literally trained for 4 years, right? Practice, just so they can show up and run a 90-second swim or a 10-second race or whatever their chosen sport is. And I was sitting there going, part of what we've talked about is that, well, how often do you actually take a moment back to go, well, am I a good communicator? I might pretend to be a good communicator, or have I refined my skill set to be a better communicator? Because those aspects of owning a room or running an internal meeting or a pitch, whatever it might be, it's amazing how many people I speak to who literally just rinse and repeat, copy and paste. And then they're also the ones that come back and go, oh, that didn't work.
Yeah. We also get this when we ask people to make a shift, and they'll come out of a meeting and say, like, I tried it, it didn't work. But did you do it properly? Like, have you've done it once, you haven't practiced it, you haven't sort of perfected it. But when you were talking then about the Olympics, what came to mind? One was that Harry Garside, the boxer, who just missed out on medaling, and he came out and said that he had 4 years of visualization of this moment, like 15, 20 times a day. And he says, and he's had some mental health issues and said, I'm going to really struggle. I'm going to go to some dark places in coming months. I've got to be prepared. Like, so openly speaking, I shared it with a few people who've then shared a whole bunch of other things on his ability to get cut through. He will inspire, so many people now by not winning. But it also got me thinking about these people who train for 4 years or 8 years or 16 years or 24 years, to get to this point, knowing they're never going to be close to win a medal, right? But they just want to go to the Olympics and they want to get their best time. They want to be able to perform better than they've ever done before. Like, how cool is that?
Oh, mate, I was listening to, I've forgotten the swimmer's name, but she just retired and she was on the commentary team and she was talking about, I guess, the level of dedication swimmers require, yeah. Right? Just that, six day a week training regime, crazy hours and crazy times of the day.
Yeah.
But she talked about, training for 4 years or whatever you want to call it in the lead up to the Olympics. And she said that the idea though is you practice, because when you want to show up as an Olympic swimmer, you have to give 100%.
Yep.
Right? And she was great. She actually spoke to her, for the mathematic nerds out there. She goes, because if I didn't do, let's say I did 98.5% instead of 100%, that could be the difference between, 0.5 of a second or whatever like that, difference between gold or silver, right?
Yeah.
If I only did 97%.
Well, let's go further. It's probably the difference between gold and not making the final.
Well, it's exactly. And then she talked about such minute numbers.
Yeah.
She wasn't saying, hey, if you go from 100 to a 50, no, she's talking 100 to 99.5 to 99 or to 98. Now, in most people's mind, they would go, oh, I did 98%. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the difference for these athletes is that it's the difference between, getting a medal or being on the podium or not even scratching the surface and getting to a semi-final, let alone a podium, right? And I just found that, again, just such a nice way of almost instilling people's, hopefully for all of us to go, look, whatever you might be good at, sport or selling or whatever your role is, how often do you take the time out to practice to be 100%?
Yep.
Whereas I think, I'll be honest, I'm human. I don't sit there and practice every day about, hey, how am I going to speak on a content or a video or a podcast?
Yeah.
I just go, I'll just show up, right? But there are people out there who don't just show up because they practice, but the reality is, their results versus us pulls apart.
Yeah, I want to unpack about 300 things out of that. I've got to do a talk next month. No, I don't have to. I've got the opportunity to in Auckland. And it's in front of, call it 1,000 people roughly. And we've had 4 meetings on it already, the client and I. The next stage is me to reshare my next iteration of it. And they're asking for the slides to be there by a certain date. They've asked Toby when I can do my rehearsals, like on the stage, the day before, what time slot do I want, and things like this. And what song do I want to walk out to? Like, this is the most organized I've ever heard of an organization in my life. Like, they are brilliant at it, at this. So imagine how great the actual event's going to be for this.
Oh, yeah.
But someone internally joked, oh, yeah, rehearsal, Johnny, thinking, well, I'll wing it, so to speak. And I said, I would never do a large talk without seeing the venue, speaking on stage, you know, like getting into that right zone so I'm comfortable on stage, right? I'll have gone through that talk so many times, the opening, the close, you know, where I want to stand, all those little things, not to the point where it's scripted, but to the point I'm really clear and key on what messages I'm trying to hit, you know, what do I want to get out of the audience? And it's that idea of, I reckon I'm 10% of what a true high performer does as far as effort to these things. And then you look at what goes into, and I was just, the other thing I was thinking about, one of the reasons you also practice is to feel good on stage, even if you're not feeling good on stage. And I think about, let's say someone in equestrian, right? They have to spend 4 years so they can perform at 2:53 in a suburb of Paris on a Thursday and then re-perform the next morning at 11, 10 a.m. That's the time. But also have a horse that's ready to perform at that time. Like, it's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, the Palace of Versailles is where the equestrian is this year. And
now you're showing off.
It's a beautiful location. But you're spot on. You know, I think one of the Aussies just won bronze today.
Okay.
And he talked about that. He goes, the reality is, this is a three-day thing, yeah, right? Day one, the weather was, you know, was raining a little bit and blah, blah, blah. Next day, it's sunny and this and that. You're spot on. Not only getting your own self up and ready, but you've got an animal, a horse that, you know, but again, you know, you talk about practice and he talked about that. He goes, hey, this is literally what I've done, spent 4 years doing.
Yeah. And so if we break it back, because again, this idea, and we had Cameron Vanderberg on our, what's it called, on our podcast, who has 16 world records, been to the Olympics and things, but he missed out on the final of the world championships by such a minute amount. And then that's what drove him to go away and be a world record holder. But this idea of what are the things we can do to be better at our role, to be great at our role, like these little things that we can do, one of them is, you know, communication. We interviewed someone the other day talking about how do you start the day just with intent? How do you be really clear on what it is you're trying to achieve? Like, again, these Olympians, imagine them waking up in the day going, I wonder what I'll do today. I wonder what the focus will be. Like, it's really clear and it's really mapped out, right? From there. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's an interesting way of looking at what we do. And it's, you know, once every 4 years coming around.
Yeah.
Could be a good way to reflect about what it is.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, I was just thinking about that as you were saying, you know, a bit of the work that you did with my old team, you know, where the team was amazingly skilled at what they do. They are exceptional operators. But what that also created for themselves was that sort of rinse and repeat method. You know, they always just copied and pasted the same way of starting a webinar or a seminar or whatever it might be. And just because that's what they were used to, right? But I know the work that we did was actually just to go, let's just take you away from that environment and go, if you could say this again, knowing that these are the goals, how would you say it? And interestingly, every one of them walked away with a completely different intro to a webinar and seminar. And I know we had amazing results almost straight away, right? But it took them, you know, for them to sort of get away from the BAU, if you want to call it, of just rinse and repeat work, to go, actually, what is the better way? Because the reality is there is always a better way.
Yeah.
Or there is always another way. Or but a way do we actually spend the time to think it? That's all.
This cool video that we shared internally, and we can't share it externally because it's a bit unsavory, some of the language that's used, but it was Will Smith talking about the difference between 90% and 100% is about half. And he said it, he learned that from a director where he said, oh, that movie looks great, about 90% there. He goes, yeah, we're about 90%, we're about halfway. Because that last 10% is about another half of work. And he talked about how his son was getting B's and said, oh, I could get A's if I want. I'm, you know, I'm almost there. And he says, no. Like, the difference between a C and a B and an A are very different things. And I think when you look at performance, you know, you could be a good performer, but going from a good performer to a really high performer and maintaining it and keeping it, the work that goes into that is quite significant. So is the reward. But the work that goes in is a lot.
So here's a question for you then, because you obviously live and breathe this. What do you think stops people from practicing?
I think it comes down to a few things. I think one is it's uncomfortable, and probably less uncomfortable for some. You know, I've actually just made peace with it, and so I'll role play. In fact, I have to role play because that's what gets me better, and I want mastery. That's my goal. Like, I want to be, you know, the best at this in the world, and so therefore, and I'm so far away from that, that it's just going to take continual practice. Like, I think about as running a podcast, like, I'm already halfway through this going, I wish I could cut out 12 minutes of stuff I've said, right? So I think that the practice bit is just one of those things is it's uncomfortable. I think, too, practicing means you're going to suck a little bit, and we don't like that feeling, right? And so getting things wrong, you know, think about sales when you first start, and you've done recruitment, right? Search, how much rejection do you get? And then you move into a role where you don't get rejected. It feels good. But are you growing? Are you learning, you know, from there? So I think there's two things. And I think number three is a lot of people are just happy to coast, right? I remember 20-something years ago, I was role-playing every day, selling alarm systems. And I'd been broken into, and I got this real, like, I really believed in it. But I also became the number one salesperson in the world for this business. So I became really good at the craft. And this guy came in, he was an ex-police officer, and he said that, I believe in protecting people, whereas you're just here for the money. And I said, if you truly believed in it, you'd work on your craft. Because I sell 15 a week, you sell 3. So I protect 15 families, you protect 3. Right? But instead of just telling everyone you believe in it, actually get into the office with me and role play. You know, work on every time you don't get one. Why? What did I do? What was I missing? What was I not connecting on? You know, it's that kind of piece out there.
I couldn't agree more.
So what do you think?
Oh, look, I think the first one you said, the vulnerability. I think you know, as a society, we talk about vulnerability a lot more, which I think is awesome. Yeah, you know, great. You talked about the boxer earlier, and I think that's brilliant. You know, because we know that's a societal issue, right? However, I think it's really hard for people to go down that path for many of reasons, because it's too confronting. And look, you know, the human brain, that's how we're wired, right? Anything that's hard to do, we try and really just don't bother doing.
Yeah.
And we pick out the easy wins, because that's the way we're sort of trained almost sometimes. If it's easy, just keep doing it. You know what I mean? I think for me, yeah, practicing or, you know, or getting better at whatever that craft is, people just don't get away, because they're so in the now, you don't get away from that.
Yeah.
And as a result, you can't see ahead of it, behind it, or anything like that, because you're stuck.
But don't you also think if you get a salesperson, an executive, you know, an executive that talks to their team once a week, getting them to say, well, what could you do to get greater cut through? And let's say you got them to practice and to reflect on each one. What is the result going to be instantly? Unlikely very, very small, right? It's going to be incremental, right? But over time, what it means is that everyone in your team will be clearer on their focus, and they're going to be led and guided by a great communicator, which means they're going to respect that skill and trait. So they're going to go away and do it, and their people and their customers, like, it actually, that's what builds momentum in organizations. And it's that idea of you're vulnerable, it feels awful, but you do it anyway, is an approach. And if I work with a team that's really uncomfortable with role playing and practice, I say, great, we need to get comfortable, right? We've got to do it enough till we get comfortable, right? Because it shouldn't feel uncomfortable, because we shouldn't be aiming for perfection in our practice, right? We should be trying things. You know, like it's this idea of like practicing stuff. Like, you try a new opening. People say, do you think that'll work? I don't know. Why don't we practice it? Yeah, no, that was terrible. Let's do it again. You know, like, how do you know unless you try it?
Absolutely. And I think the fact is you got to try it. You know what I mean? And have that, not let's not be worried about the failure part of it because you haven't given it a go.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people don't give it a go because they're afraid to fail.
Yes.
Right? But how do you know? You know, and it's like, I saw a quote or whatever you want to call it, where we're talking about, and I think it was around Are You Okay Day last year. It was something around, you know, people sort of imagining the problem before it exists.
Yeah.
And because you do that, your brain just keeps thinking about the negative side of it.
Yep.
Right? Because you've already pretended that it's not going to work.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, you've just stopped it, right? Yep. So I think it's about, you know, have a go and not worry about the outcome.
Yep.
And the outcome's somewhat irrelevant, I think. Yep. And again, I was sort of going back to the team, the work we did in our team. You know, part of that, though, is also the role of the leader.
Yep. 100%.
Because if they don't encourage that behavior, and like you say, right, let me be a part of this with you. Not just tell you what to do, but let me be a part of this with you.
Yeah.
If that's not instilled in teams, well, how will they move on?
Yeah.
When I was in recruitment, I had a chance to work with some amazing leaders.
Yeah.
Right? Amazing leaders where to this day, I actually still use some of the same phrases that they used to say in client meetings. Because I was just like, oh my God, that is the way to sell,
yeah.
Right? And I still hold on to that.
Yep.
I've been out of recruitment for 8 years now, I reckon. But it's still something that's, you know, but for me, it was watching the leader do it. I'm like, oh wow, how good.
Yeah.
Right? But then I gave it a go in my own style. So, and it worked. I'm like, oh wow, this works. And so then when I led recruitment businesses and teams, they started to copy and paste and whatnot. Yep. And go, there is a method to this madness.
Yes.
You know, sometimes we have to be told to practice.
Yeah.
But I actually think, you know, encouraging practice at all levels of an organization or a team is actually really powerful.
Yeah.
Because often it's left to the individual to practice.
Yep.
And I think, you know, I'll go back to the work you did with us. We made sure, you know, all of my leaders and the team were involved in every single session we did.
Yeah, 100% you did. In fact, there was a lot of prep that went in. There was a real need to get involved by everyone. If I think to, I've got 18 episodes of Psyche of Sales. One of them was with a guy called Mike Wilson, Order of Australia Medal, CEO of JDRF Australia, the Type 1 Diabetes Charity. And he inspires me every time I spend time with him. We had a drink a couple of weeks ago. He's retiring from this. And the way he gets me to think about my business and me as a leader and as a human, but he challenges me. And he goes, well, how would that work? How would that feel? And I said, it would feel awful. Why? Because it would bring up stuff from when I was a kid and what I didn't have, you know, things like this. And I don't know if I could do that. But that challenge and that thought, so then we just acted it out, right? Stella Cho was one. She's on one of the episodes. She was one of the greatest participants I've ever had in a session. 12 managing directors of a, or maybe 15, of a big global business. And she just got involved in everything. What about this? How do I try it? Oh, that's a really good idea. Why don't I try it? And the people she's going to try it on are the most senior of leaders. And then Stella got me in to run a session with her team, 45 people. Every single one of the 45 within the first hour had volunteered, stated, questioned something. Like they'd all been involved. Why? Because she'd prepped them for it. This is the expectation. This is how you're going to learn from it. Like, think about the value. Like, people pay me the same dollar amount, you know, whether how they get involved, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's huge involvement or not. But she's getting a 10 times ROI just by prepping the team and getting them ready and valued. And the other one was Josh Kennedy, the former Swans captain. And just the relentless nature of their leadership.
Mm.
This idea of we believe in these four things and everyone must pick each other up on it if we're not there
mm.
and rewarded if we get there.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the ultimate high-performance, you know, sort of unit or a team, right, is when everyone's performing.
Yeah.
Right? High-performance teams isn't just about one or two high-performers
yep.
and the rest are being carried.
100%.
Right? You know, if you're going to truly say, I've got a high-performing business or a high-performing team, to me, that means everyone is contributing to the success.
Yep.
You as a leader, you're contributing to that success, but everyone in your team is also contributing, right? And I think too often, there's a question that I used to ask in recruitment all the time to candidates. I'm like, you know, so if we were to pick out, let's say your team, and let's say these are sales roles or sales candidates, I would always go, okay, where are you on the league ladder?
Yep.
And some people go, oh, I'm fourth. Okay. So my next question is, well, what's the other three people ahead of you doing that you're perhaps not doing or practicing? And it was interesting because they would actually call out behaviors that they should, you know what, I need to do more of this myself.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's actually three people ahead of me. But it took questions like that to actually for them to go, oh, actually, maybe I need to, you know, a bit of self-improvement or self-development, whatever you want to call it. But it was another way to just kind of get people to think, well, what's your craft?
Yeah.
Are you how good are you at your craft? Are you in the top 1% or in the top 30%?
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
This came up last night where a group said this top performer probably won't get involved. And then they said, someone said, yeah, he had already messaged me and say, I'm going to drop off soon and so on. And how would you manage that?
That's a great question. And I've dealt with that where I had a team in recruitment where we had just two absolute stellar, you know, performers. You know, numbers just spoke. And then at the end of the day, the way I addressed that is to, when every time we did team development or activities along this line, I said, for us, we have to succeed as a team, right? For us to also succeed individually.
Yep.
Right? Just because one or two people succeed, that's great. They're going to get the commissions and they're going to make money, whatnot. But you're not a self-employed person.
Yep.
Right? You're part of a team, right? It actually came up in the Grand Prix the other night where I think it was Lando Norris that was getting told by his team principal saying, hey, this isn't about the pole position for you, but this is actually about us as a team.
Yep.
But I think most leaders would actually shy away from talking to their high performers because they don't want to disturb it.
Yeah.
Right? They're like, oh, no, I don't want to annoy this person in case they leave.
Yeah.
Right? But I actually think there's a lot to be gained from actually having the conversation around, hey, we really value you. We love what you do. But how can you impart some of that to your colleagues who are also aspiring to do the same? But we need you to be a part of this. We can't get there if you choose to opt out.
I've seen teams before where there's a really big gap between number one and everybody else, and that person has kind of held that over the business or a branch, and that through coaching that person, it's been actually seen that you're probably better off without that person. Sometimes it's not, you know, but actually trying to shape that, the act of coaching them through it shows everybody else the expectation, because by being a mindset of, I won't get involved and I won't help and I won't this, depending on the organization, but that doesn't strike me as the values that we lead with.
Correct. Right?
And, you know, when you think of the Swans, when they said, these are our four values we live by, they actually live by them. They're not just four words on a page. You know, I often will say to a client, so what are your values here? And they go, oh, and they'll name three. And then there's a fourth one around. So you don't know, if you don't know them, you're not living them, right? And so in this particular case, you could see there was a girl sort of walking around it and things like this. And to me, that was a great insight into where they're probably at as an organisation at the moment. And there's some good leaders in there. But I think that the work that needs to go in to actually say, like, what does high performance look like? What does it mean to be part of this?
Mm.
I think it's a really important one. And I think you do have to have the conversation.
And
then you've got to make a decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's plenty of, you know, stories around, you know, leaders looking after their high performers to the detriment of the rest of the business and the rest of the team, right? Which is a really poor example of leadership, I think, personally. Yeah. So you've got to make that call very early on. But I think, you know, as a leader or any leader out there, not having the conversation is worse.
Yep.
Right? But then equally, I think there's a part of the coaching part, as you say, right, is also going, look, do I even know how to have the conversation with my high performer who doesn't want to take part?
Yep.
Because most people go, actually, I don't even know how to have the conversation.
Yeah, agreed.
Right? Because there might be a leader who just avoids confrontation or whatever, but genuinely, there might be people out there going, I actually don't know how to have the conversation. But that doesn't mean you avoid it.
Okay. So let's go full circle back to why don't people practice. I gave you some reasons. I think the fourth reason is because leaders or peers are poor at giving feedback and it can be detrimental to someone's confidence, career, but also if they don't know what they're giving feedback on, they can actually make the person worse.
Couldn't agree more.
Like, we can't get it twisted. Like, training can make people worse.
Yeah.
Right? If you're training the wrong way, the wrong areas, or you're changing stuff that you're really good at. And I think that that's a, it's a really good point. I think the thing that I want to get across is when it comes to high performance is we get so caught up sometimes in budgets and targets or percentage of. So we are 150% of target, or this person is 150% of target. What does that mean? Well, it could mean they're really, really good. It could mean that they've absolutely maxed the opportunity. It could mean the target was too low and it's too high on others and it hasn't been done accurately. It could mean that the market really went into to the mode of it working for them. Like, it could mean literally anything. We always say, why don't you compare yourself to the ideal? Like, what's possible? And this is something no one wants to do because we get so caught up in targets and budgets and how we get paid. So it takes mature organizations to do this. But just say, what is the opportunity in the marketplace? Right? And what share of it do we have? And what share of it could we have? And now you might be 180% of target, but you might be 40% of the opportunity. And you go, great, it was a reasonable year, but we left a lot on the table. So what could we do to capture that bit? And so someone might be the highest performer out there, but why aren't they at 200% or 300%? Like, what's the limitation we're doing? Normally it's the year before. It's numbers, don't you think?
Totally. And look, and I think a lot of people go, oh yeah, let's just go, we did 200 last year, let's do 220 this year.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a nice, safe...
And a stretch target of 250.
Yeah, because that's a nice, safe number to have.
Yep.
But you're right, absolutely. It's like, well, 250 of what?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And think about, like, you know, what if you won the biggest client ever on a deal that no one's ever heard of? What if you won five of them? Do five of those exist in the marketplace? You know, like my world changed the year that the meeting I walked away from, and they just spent $1.5 million with, I didn't want to use the word competitor. I'm year two in my business and they're a global organization. But I walked out saying, I didn't know people spent $1.5 million on this stuff, right? Like, I love that that company had appetite. They genuinely want to change. We can make that change. So I went out and just thought differently about opportunities. And I think that that's it's something that can often go a little bit missing, but it's led from leaders all the way down.
Right? Absolutely. I think people underestimate the role, no matter where they are in an organization, right? It doesn't matter if you're a 10-person business or a 5,000-person business. I think everyone, and look, this doesn't, you know, it sounds quite stoic, but, you know, everyone does have a role to play.
Yeah.
Right? But it is up to the leaders fundamentally to encourage, you know, so this is something that I've held on to from one of my leaders back in my recruitment days, and he, I think he still says this, but it's certainly something that I've copied and pasted, because he always said, you know, the way he operated as a leader was to encourage, empower, and then inspire.
Okay.
Right? Because he said, if you can't encourage people, you can't empower them.
Yeah.
If you can't empower them to, you know, do what they do and be good at their role, you can't actually inspire them. But too often we talk about leaders going, oh, you know, inspirational leadership. But what is inspirational leadership?
Yep.
You know, it's just a term. It's a buzzword, I think, personally. But you go, well, you know, what would your team say? Oh, you know, the team go, oh, actually, I can't do this because, you know, I don't have the budget, or I'm not allowed to say this or try this or practice or whatever. So I think there's an element of, you know, knowing that everyone's got an opportunity to play in this.
Yep.
But every leader, no matter how small or how big your team is, you can contribute to this because you can actually encourage that behavior in your personnel, no matter how big the team is.
It is when we talk about what a success look and feel like sometimes to leaders, and they say, I want to be inspiring and I want to be motivating and I want to be this. And you're kind of like, yeah, but just sometimes discipline, right? It's just that idea. Like, every day I had to walk in the office when I was younger and say, how many leads did I generate the day before? How many presentations did I do? How many appointments I attended? How many sales I made? You know, out loud. And that was accountability, right? It was that piece out there. If I didn't bring enough leads in, they just took me out of the field. And I couldn't earn money. It was commission only, right? It was that idea of it was just really clear. You do this because we know that gets that result. And whilst a perfect world is, we're inspiring, you know, our team of people to go out there and tackle the world, not everyone is inspired to work for a bank or sell a building or a, you know, a medical device or whatever it is. Sometimes people can be really high performer without being inspired.
No, absolutely. And look, you know, I'm not a numbers person, but one thing I learned through, you know, certainly studies is, you know, the numbers tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, and in recruitment, we used to use the same sort of analogy where when I used to run the team, I didn't say to them, oh, here are your targets. I would always ask them, how much money do you want to make?
Yep.
And they'd say, oh, I want to make 300 grand. Okay. What's your average placement fee? Or what's your average fee? You know, oh, it's 15 grand.
Yep.
Okay. How many placements does it take for you to get 15 grand?
Yep.
This. How many candidates do you need to find to get you to that? Or how many job orders do you need to get you to that? And you work backwards, how many calls. So you go right back to this is how many calls I need to make every day.
You should see the business plans that we provide our clients to write out. And it goes to the very level of what did you write last year? What's the goal for this year? What has to happen? You know, like we actually break it down to, so how many people do you need to speak to every day to equal that?
Correct, right? And I think people don't put any effort into it, right? Even at an individual level sometimes, because we just go, oh, I want to make 300 grand this year.
Yep.
Yeah, but how are you going to make it, right? You're going to make it by making one phone call a day? And that might be the case for some people, by the way.
The bit I'll also challenge on, though, is when I think about when people say, I want to earn, what are you willing to do to get it?
Great question.
Because from my perspective, I've worked with some geniuses in consulting, way cleverer than I am, but it's uncomfortable to sit and pick up a telephone, right, and make calls. It's uncomfortable to email the CEO of a bank cold and say, hey, I noticed you're talking about growth, right? It took me 6 months to realize that's the wrong person to be targeting at a bank. You know, the CEO has no idea what we do, but that's okay. But it's that idea of like, it would have been, I think through COVID we worked out I was making 40 to 50 calls a day, right? And then before you know it, the business went from lost everything to being three times the size. And it's no surprise because it was sitting there just making call after call. And other people I was speaking to saying, just going to let it pass. Whereas we went and built a digital learning platform.
Mm.
Right? We invested. We doubled down. Like, you know, it's that idea of sometimes, like, what are you willing to... who wouldn't want to earn insert number? You know, and I know that listeners, some of them are going to make very different, varying amounts out there. But if you're on 50, who wouldn't want to earn 100? Who wouldn't want to earn 300? Who wouldn't want to earn 1 million? 5 million? Who knows, right? But what are you willing to do? And I'm not saying just work harder. But show up with greater intent, learn your craft, be a greater communicator. Like it's that kind of aspect there that if you were to do that, it's unlikely you're not going to be a higher performer.
I couldn't agree more, mate. And I think, you know, in the current climate, you know, the reality is there's a lot of organisations out there that have, you know, restructured and all that. There's a lot of people out there, you know, redundancies and all that kind of stuff. And I've certainly spoken to many people who have been impacted by that.
Yep.
But, you know, there's a portion of them, I would say a majority of them, who are actually, to your point, they're actually just, they're not doing anything about it, right?
Yep.
They're hoping by, you know, applying for a job on Seek or LinkedIn or whatever, that's going to get them out the door. But you, well, put yourself out there,
yep.
You know, because the reality is there's no shortage of candidates and good candidates too out there, right? Put yourself out there as your SME or whatever your expertise is, to your point of what are you willing to do that someone else isn't doing?
Yeah. I'm helping someone at the moment who wants to do a career transition, and they are saying, here's a couple of industries. I said, great, so who within that do you like? Great, so who within those firms are the people who are influencers? Oh, I don't know. Great, so go away, find out who they are. Came back with 3 or 4. No, show me 50, right? And now I want you to contact 50 people, so we've created a way of doing it, right? I actually know these 3 people. I'll make an intro. But it's getting really proactive and a willingness there. I'll tell you this, if they get a job in one of those firms, everyone will say, oh, how lucky was that you were able to make that shift? But it's very little about luck, right?
No, it's not. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head earlier about, you know, there's a level of mastering your craft. I think is, you know, I think that you actually say it a little better than, I remember this on one of the modules on Enable IQ. Was it, you say practice doesn't make it perfect, but perfect practice makes perfect? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. There was a mentor of mine that said this. He said, practice doesn't make perfect, practice makes permanent. It's perfect practice that makes perfect.
That's the one.
And I think that's the piece that, you know, you practice something poorly, you will get really good at being poor at that. Right? And that's, if you see role play sessions sometimes that are done, they just go through the motions. Like, we'll literally do a session on questioning, and then people will go in, were you part of a session once? We're doing a set that wasn't in your team. We just talked about questioning. The entire role play was on questioning, and the person just spoke for 5 minutes and didn't ask a single question. Like, imagine what they're doing in the field. That's the other thing as a leader. If you're not practicing, how do you know what your team is doing?
Absolutely.
Right? And the role plays are just such great insights. The amount of times people say, oh, I wouldn't do that in front of a customer, then why did you do it here? Like, what? That's your default I just saw, right?
So true.
Or sometimes people get really nervous, so they say, that's not how I would do it. I completely get that. But what you've demonstrated is what you would do if you were nervous, right? Are you ever nervous in your role? Yep. So chances are you probably don't know how you're reacting and acting. So let's practice what it's like to be nervous. And over a period, you'll suddenly get comfortable. And then you can really start. Mm. Like, imagine if I'm going to do a worse AFL analogy, but call it rugby league or rugby union, right? If you're scared of the defence being at you, right, all the time, you're not going to perform. So you've got to get comfortable. And then once you're comfortable, then you'll start being able to be more creative and so on. Like, it's that idea of really breaking it up and just loving the learning.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, one thing that I've tried to do in every single role is not be too removed from what's actually happening on the ground. Because I think sometimes, and look, I get it, some you can't do that in some roles because it's just not practical. But, you know, one of the things that I've certainly learned is, you know, sort of, that whole sort of monkey see, monkey do approach, I guess, if you want to call it, where I would openly say to my team, hey, if you can't get through that client, tell me. I'll make it my responsibility to get us both in front of that client.
Yeah.
Right? And then that's about how do you then encourage, empower, and inspire that behavior, right? And that can be applied. And I've applied that in every role, whether it's, you know, running an education team or RMs or sales or whatever it might be, because there's always an opportunity to get involved to show that, hey, look, there is another way.
Yeah.
But also for me to be able to hopefully, you know, keep a currency on my own skill set and practical skill set. But then also for if someone is struggling or is unsure about, oh, I don't know if I want to give this a go or whatever, it's also for a chance for me to say, it's okay. Yep. Let's both give it a crack.
Yep.
And it's not, you know, hey, go do. No, let's do this together.
Yeah.
There's a power in that, and I think probably not done enough.
Yeah, and I think you can see it as well that organisations with leaders in them can just get so caught up in meetings and so on. I remember he'll remain nameless, but he had a coveted role of being head of distribution for a firm, and then he got an acting head, like got to sort of step into it for a period. But I'm no doubt he would have got it, and he just said the lack of distribution that's done in that distribution role. Like, he thought he was influencing sales and impacting sales and so on, but there was so little of that being done.
Yeah.
Group the other day, we talked about this idea of going to check in every 2 weeks with them around how the leaders are doing with role plays and so on. They said, don't you think fortnightly is a bit much? And I said, tell me something they're doing in their role that's better and more effective than helping their team of 20 people be more effective. Like, that's the multiplier effect, right? If we can increase our top people's performance by 10 or 20%, our bottom people's performance by 20, 30%. Like, I actually, in my head, sometimes, why isn't everyone doing this?
Like, yeah,
why am I convincing them?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I agree. And I think there's an element of, I mean, there is no such thing as common sense, as people call it. And I know I experienced that in one of my roles where took on a new role. And on my first day, I said, you know, where are my clients that I've been allocated? Because I want to give them a call and introduce myself. Yeah. And I was straight away slapped. This is day one, by the way, in a job. I'm thinking I'm doing the right thing here. Yeah. I got slapped on the wrist saying, no, that's actually not what we do. Because I couldn't hear anyone making phone calls. Yeah. I couldn't hear anyone doing any. And I've come from a world where that was the norm, you know, certainly in recruitment. And I was just sort of going, right, so how do we speak to our clients? I know we write to them. I'm going, that's not how I'm going to build a relationship, by writing letters to a client. Yeah. I want to talk to my clients. And then equally, it actually showed the depth of relationships that were perceived relationships, you know. So, look, I think it's an interesting one where you sort of go, well, what's actually happening on the ground? And do you know what's happening on the ground?
There's a guy I've been catching up with of late. I've been introduced, and he runs a business on advocacy. And
interesting.
We first had a conversation, like a Zoom, for 40 minutes, and we were an hour and a half on the Zoom. And then he flew to Sydney just so we could meet in person. We spent three and a half hours. I met with him yesterday in Melbourne because he's Melbourne-based. I'll get him on the podcast soon. I'll get you to meet him as well. He's like a brilliant, brilliant guy. But just the way he thinks about how many people think their customers are thinking about them versus how many of them are thinking about you. Like how many are sitting in the last 6 months have actually thought, I wonder what, insert your name from this company's, how they're going, and if there's anything we could do to help.
Yeah, so true.
And probably not as many as you think. Think he does it from a staff perspective. How many staff members within your are actually sitting down, having a cup of coffee, thinking, what more I could do to help the organisation achieve this?
Yeah, oh, mate, even just, you know, in any role, whether it's, you know, sales or not, everyone's going, well, what am I contributing today?
Yeah.
And do I want to contribute more?
Yeah.
You know, or am I encouraged to contribute more? Yeah. I think that, you know, people fill out surveys and engagement results and all that kind of stuff. You know, that happens in every organisation. But then you sit and go, well, look, you know, and one of the questions I think that's often asked is, you know, do you feel like contributing more, or, you know, do you feel like you're contributing to the role? And some people will go, actually, I don't even know where I'm contributing. I actually don't know how. I don't know where my role contributes.
I've heard that a lot. I've heard that from
which
people
is
saying,
to me, surprising.
I don't know the impact I'm actually having in my day-to-day job.
Correct, right? And you sit there and go, well, where's the role of the organisation or the leader in that to be able to go, right, well, this is the role that you do and this is where it actually contributes. And it could be just, sometimes it's a simple dollar values and that's okay.
Yeah.
For people to go, all right, at least I know where it's going to, at least my contribution shows up on the P&L somewhere.
Yeah.
Great. Or in a relationship or products and services sold, whatever it might be. But it's surprising how many people, particularly in sales, don't know where their contribution's going.
Yeah. Do you know, I got sat down by a team member in our current business to say, I don't think you're leading properly. You're getting so caught up in doing this, 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 and this, that we're lacking direction. We're doing, you know, it was really clear. And said, it's making it harder to work there.
Wow.
Right? As a result. Like, that's an eye-opener, right? But what bravery, right? To come and say that. And what a kick up the butt. That you need to sometimes say, we're going to do this a bit better and a bit differently. And I think that's, you know, we're almost at an hour. It's the fastest hour I think I've had in my life. Let's save this for our next conversation because we're going to have a few of these, I think, mm-hmm. if you're open to that.
Josh. 100%. We'd love to.
But I think it's that idea of how many leaders out there are leading the way that they should be. How many of them are actually influencing and impacting the performance of their teams? Not going through the motions, but genuinely saying, how could we increase this? Whether you've got a team of 3 or 300, right, what could we be doing to make every individual, like we've got a group that we work with who've gone from 16% market share to 48% market wow. share in the last 5 years. Genuine market share, genuine global competitors, and they're a local business, right? When I look at what they've done a lot of work to get there. But I actually believe that the biggest shift is that they've, every individual, hundreds of people, are just having better conversations every day, right? They're great at marketing, they're great at systems, there's a lot of things they're great at. But I think that when you actually look at a team of a few hundred people, you know, some of the people who don't want to have great conversations probably aren't there. They've brought in people who want to have better conversations, but their focus on skill and process and so on, it's been quite phenomenal. And it's to triple market share, to now be bigger than your two biggest competitors. They've gone from third in the market to now number one, bigger than the next two combined. Mm. Like, that's pretty special when you consider the simplicity of their focus.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, just the way the markets are today, it doesn't matter what industry you're working or sector you're in. Let's face it, there is a bit of a much of a muchness when it comes to products and services, yep. right? But it's the application of the person selling. In, you know, certainly what I've found, you know, is that how they build that relationship, how they build rapport with a customer or customers, that's actually the difference between someone picking up market share or losing market share.
Yeah.
You know, because the reality is, I certainly find that, I don't know, I feel like everyone's trying to do basics really well.
Yeah.
But some of us are just ignoring the basics because we feel like we've already got them down pat.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was going through the questioning module on Enable IQ the other day, and it's quite a refreshing module. I'd go, right, if I had to ask that same question now, how would I position that question? Yeah. And it challenged me in a very different way to ask that question. Funnily enough, tested it out on LinkedIn, you know, recently. Surprise, surprise, it worked.
Yeah, I would be surprised if anything less than 90% of leaders and salespeople, let's just say probably anyone, are actually sticking with questioning long enough. I think that people are jumping to solution, jumping to solve way too quickly. And I think that these basics or fundamentals, as we often call it, they don't stay good. Like a golf coach still practices those fundamentals every single day, not on the golf course, practicing them, right? Because they know that when they need it, it's going to be there. Whereas I think in our roles, we just do and expect that to be enough.
No, I couldn't agree more, mate. I think, you know, that's, and I think that's sometimes where, you know, opportunity shows or opportunity is missed.
Yeah.
Is because we've sort of just been in the moment and just kept doing and blinkers on.
Yeah.
Right. You take the blinkers off and actually you can see the wider strategic view, you might go, actually, I might just think about this completely differently. And I think, again, what might sound like common sense or basic fundamentals, let's face it, we don't do it. But then when we see someone else do it, we're like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I might leave it with this. My old business partner used to say that a lot of what we're going to talk about is common sense, but the application of it
is not
so common. And I always liked that idea. I wish I'd said it perfectly, but that's, we live and learn. But yeah, I like that idea. It might look like common sense. Well, it is common sense, but the application of it isn't so common. And that's what we're going to explore today. And I think, you know, if people take anything from this, if you're a leader, go and ask more questions. Go and actually see, how can I influence my team? How can they be more influential? Like, really focus on that communication piece. I think you get a good return. Presh, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I think we may have earned a drink or something from this. What do you think?
I could do with one.
Yeah, beautiful. Mate, I really appreciate that. That time has absolutely flown. I'll review my performance. I think I can do a lot better, but I think you're brilliant.
I think I could do a lot better too, mate. I think, you know, these podcasts are great because, you know what the scary thing with podcasts is? You can get to listen to your own voice and see how scary it is.
Yes, 100%.
And let's face it, we can both waffle.
We can. Well, let's go do that together. Thank you all for listening. Appreciate it. And Presh, we'll see you really soon.
Thanks, everyone.